Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're going to talk about something that just came to my mind last night as I was lying down to bed. I'm going to call this telepathic cells. And I was just literally putting my head down on the bed last night and just letting my mind wander. And this sort of moment of clarity came about based on a bunch of research that other people have done. But the two words came together, telepathic cells. And I thought, wow, that's fucking random. If any one of you have studied frequencies and studied the way that a DNA double helix is formed, and you've ever seen the internals of an antenna, or paid attention to the way an antenna is created, then this theory will be, you'll be ready for this theory, 100%. But then there's some implications which are very interesting. So what do I mean by telepathic cells? Now, I'm going to ask this question, and for those of you who have studied what I just said, this won't sound profound to you. But for those of you who've never thought about this, this might be a good little twist right at the beginning. What if the design of our cells in our bodies do not just operate on electron valence transfer, meaning power going from one place to another? We do know the human body creates power. It's the premise of the movie Matrix. But there's a cellular tissue design that is more communicating telepathically. And you can adjust your perspective of what that would mean as intentional projection of thought. But on a cellular level that you're not specifically conscious of. But imagine that our cells and our bodies communicate through a medium, using a medium, but through a method that we are unaware of today, at least most people. Meaning they can communicate without moving the lips, baby. Right? So they are moving a life force. I'm going to get into life force too, because I think that it's asinine to think that we don't have one. But they are moving something like a conduit. And they do it without just the basics. Which means that if mankind is studying the human body and studying the human form, especially looking at things like the brain, the nervous system, etc., yes, we can have a cause and effect model of how smart we are because we can push on the brain and we know when people break their backs and spinal cords that this stuff happens. So we think there's a one-to-one correlation, and unfortunately, we seem to believe that we know it all the second we know anything, right? What does that mean? Why is this worth an episode? Well, let's go back here. You know, we're always trying to figure out kind of what we are so that we can, I guess, just live in a more lucid world. I mean, the idea is that if we don't know what we're made out of, then we really don't know where we've been or what we are, right? And so when someone says, what is life about? It is a philosopher's job, and hopefully a philosopher scientist's job, to expand the horizons of thought and being such that we can get to a whole nother level of consciousness on a day-to-day basis. That doesn't have to be a revolutionary change. It could be an evolutionary change. You know, I'm hoping that in my lifetime, racism will go away, but it won't. But I hope it does. So it is up to thinkers to try and parse reality. And the thing is that everything that we've ever looked for in the world, we've had to theorize its existence before we could look for it. Yeah, and that's not absolutely true. You know, sometimes we just see things happen all the time. We drop things and they fall and we're like, what the hell is that? Why is that happening, right? If you think about how mysterious gravity was, I don't know, 1,000 years ago? Think about it. You don't have anyone whispering in your ear about how the world works. And the average person doesn't really have a understanding of anything scientific 1,000 years ago. I think 3/4 of the world were incapable of writing their own name. They couldn't read the language or write the language that they spoke. That's how absolutely controlled or stupid we were. So the reason for exploring this is to take our, you know, puffed up 21st century chest and realize that just because we've made movies about accomplishments we've never done doesn't mean we've actually done them. But now what if the DNA in your chromosome, which is 50% of your DNA, the other half being protein patterns. The protein patterns are the schematics to your furniture at IKEA. And the DNA are the individual parts that duplicate in the box. I don't know if I've done this during this particular season, but you know, the big analogy for how your cell works in a chromosome is buying like an IKEA bookshelf, very specifically. Now, you know, when you buy a bookshelf, there's several shelf pieces of wood. I always pick the bookshelf because there's duplicated pieces. Now, there's a schematic piece of sheet that tells it how to be built. And you know that you could build it to be a piano. You could build it to be a bookshelf. It's wood. Knock yourself out. Actually, at IKEA, it's not wood, but whatever. Particle board. But regardless of all that, we have DNA that is built in a nucleic acid chain that has two halves that come together. There's RNA halves that come together to become DNA. They're coded together specifically based on an alphanumeric or an alphabetic key table. Various letters can only connect to various letters. So it's a very carefully designed, beautiful thing that allows us to be so much different here on this planet. But I'll be damned if when human beings learned how to pick up radio frequencies using antennas, if we didn't coil some wire around a wire, trying to sense the electromagnetism fields of dielectric and magnetism bumping into this wire, and through broadcasting the signal, creating transverse waves in the sky, we were able to modulate information. You know, first thing happened was a telegram. Then it became a radio. Then it became television. Then it turned back into, like, telephones. Right? I suppose telephone was up there in the beginning, too. But it's just modulating ones and zeros. They get quickly pulled back into something that we can use on either end, right? All right. But now let's parse this out a little bit, because I want you to understand how our consciousness could work, because this is, gets really interesting really fast, and you don't have to be a genius to completely understand it. We are, by all means, an antenna. Our DNA will pick up signals from space. It just will. It should be able to pick up any signal that will resonate at a frequency that literally has a sine, cosine, traverse wave design that could be caught by your cells, my cells, etc. It doesn't matter if you're a 400-pound person. Your cellular DNA wraps at exactly the same microns as mine. Meaning it's the same size, right? You just may... This is what I have to... This is going to be interesting when it comes to... For those of us who are smaller, those of us who are bigger. And how we deal with that, too. But now, what happens with the radio? Everybody's played with the radio, right? I got a radio, you got a radio, and there's some centralized location where the broadcast is coming from. Well, because your radio has a receiver in it, and my radio has a receiver in it, it catches a signal from a centralized location, and we both can hear the same thing. Now, technically speaking, if I'm a couple miles away from you, you're going to get the signal if you're closer to the station than I am, by a few milliseconds. But isn't that interesting that we think about it as this radio is built out of the same stuff, and of course it's going to pick up the same signal if we adjust it to the same frequency. If I go to 106.7 K-Rock here in LA, and you do the same thing and you're in LA, we're going to get the same song roughly at the same time. All right, but didn't we just agree that the human double helix is a, looks like an antenna? For those of you who haven't seen the internals of a car antenna or an antenna at your house, they're not made the same way they used to be, because we've figured out better ways of doing this, but you take a straight cord, straight wire to hold it in place, and you wrap around it, just like a peppermint stick, a coil of wire. I own a Chevy, and the OnStar draconian eavesdropping embedded into my electrical system feature that you get with all Chevys has a pretty neat looking antenna right over the rearview mirror on the outside of the car. And you can just see it's laminated in some rubber, and it's a straight cord, with a helix going down the wire. And that's how you build antennas. So we have much better designed antennas because ours has a lattice that goes between them. And we have trillions upon trillions of these little tiny radio antenna receivers. And they just so happen to be embedded with the growth patterns and growth instructions of our body. Now, I did tell you guys that the protein patterns dictate how the DNA grows. If you want to get into some science that is absolutely fascinating, and I was taught by a guy who invented folding at home at Stanford University, protein patterns are phenomenal. They are the most mysterious part of the human body, by far. Because we can see what they do, sort of. We know what they do through implication, but we don't know really. I mean, the military might have figured it out, but we don't have a lot of overt research into protein pattern research besides folding at home, which is trying to create protein blockers. But in terms of how these little things fold, because they start off in a certain chemical combination and they fold. And when they fold into the instruction pattern for the rest of the body in that area. It's almost like, you know, some improvisational dance routine that teaches the rest of the body how to do what it does, right? But we don't know what's exactly causing it to fold the way it folds. Obviously, there's some very intense logic to it because I got a hand on this side and I got a symmetrical opposite hand on this side. Now, I'm going to pause for a second because I'm going to do a little digression that I want you to think about that I hope you find interesting. Because it dawned on me the other day and my brain just sort of popped. We are these amazing symmetrical beings externally, right? You divide us right down the middle and our body is attempting to create a duplicate from the left to the right to the best of its ability. Now, I have never studied the hair follicle placement on my head or the hair on my legs to the hair, you know, on the other side. I definitely have some differences between the two halves of my bodies. There's like a little mole here, blah, 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 right? But for the most part, my left half is an opposite of my right half. And isn't that phenomenal? And you might think, well, that seems like a pretty good mathematical constant of the universe. Wouldn't it be natural to mirror what's going on one side versus the other? And I think actually not. I think a big nebulous Chet from, you know, Weird Science would be sort of what we're talking about. And you're going to have to watch that movie to understand what I'm saying. It would be a nebulous thing, a globular thing. Well, I got some DNA here. Oh, there's more DNA over here. There's more food on this side of the body than that side of the body. We're going to grow out of whack. But no. There seems to be some massively intelligent design going on here. But any physicians yelling at the screen right now and they're saying, yeah, but cut the body open. Take a look inside. It's anything but symmetrical, right? No, now think about it. Inside our body, all right? This is what's fucking crazy. Part of our body is massively symmetrical inside. But look at the human heart. The human heart, the center chamber of our existence, is the most fucking atypical, asymmetrical thing you've ever seen in your life. I don't know about you, but every time I look at it, I kind of have a weird feeling of like, ew. Yeah, I like the Valentine's heart idea. That son of a bitch is symmetrical. It's kind of cute looking, right? No, our heart's just like some alien has been implanted. If any of you are familiar with Doctor Who, it's like the Dalek alien inside the little Dalek, you know. Look, we got our stomach on one side, you know, and for those of you in the Mandela effect, I understand you guys have differences in opinions, but you got the stomach over here. It did seem like it moved since I was a kid, but I can't remember the hell where they said it was. But when I was a kid, they used to say, you know, your heart, they basically had raised everyone to believe your heart was in a particular location, and then they said it's actually off to the side or something. But all of our organs are really wonky inside. You know, your intestines, got your appendix on the right, and your upper intestine just sails down past the gallbladder, goes right to your appendix, bounces back up, starts wiggling down the back of your body. It's just phenomenal. How did we get so symmetrical yet so asymmetrical? And then the thing works. It's a beautiful, perfect machine. It really is. The only thing that ever happens to us is that we engage in malnutrition. We engage in intoxication. We have accidents, physical accidents. And that's the only time the body ever fails you. Yeah, we don't live forever. But again, like, that's part of the nature of the design of the universe. But now, if you just accept for an instant the notion that the double helix will behave in an electrical universe as an antenna to pick up frequencies, then that completely and profoundly changes the entire engagement that human beings have with the universe. It is no longer that high school, you know, biochem or biology or anatomy class that makes any sense anymore. It's completely different. College universities, to my knowledge, have not upgraded their knowledge from just bag of chemicals up to a frequency model of the universe and what those implications mean. I'm sure there's research centers and grad schools and PhDs that are doing this sort of thing. Stanford seems to always do cool things. But they sure as hell haven't changed K through 12 in this realm. But now I say telepathic cells. What am I talking about? All right. Well, telepathic, okay, is obviously a method of transferring data from point A to point B, one, with intent, and two, sort of in an stealthy, sort of unorthodox medium, which is only labeled as such because the medium itself has not been documented into the mainstream understanding of the consciousness of man, right? Well, what I'm trying to do is build up to this idea of the telepathic cell by reminding us that we're a bunch of antennas, right? Every single thing that we're made out of is an antenna. And if you use the broadcast model of a radio station to radios, then every single one of us should be picking up the global radio station of the universe. I'm always saying on this show, centralized consciousness, centralized consciousness. Well, this could be God sitting up there with a DJ booth and a headset on, and he's got glow sticks around his neck, and he's about to drop the bass on us every morning. Or it is a collective consciousness, a collective frequency of all living beings in this universe, this particular one that is governing all the things that we're discussing here. I think it was Lori Gale. She's talking in one of her episodes, and it was her existentialism episode, which she lost, got deleted. But she was really reminding us about the fact that we have to be careful what we think, because it's a collective consciousness. You know, I'm going to mention something without really revealing anything. For those of you who watch Walking Dead, I was very disappointed with the episode 1 of season 7. And I was very disappointed with the choice that they made to create a very graphic episode. And I'm not going to reveal anything, so don't worry, but other than the gore. If you saw the last episode of season 6, they dramatized in the camera that someone was getting hit over the head fatally with a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire. And they filmed it from the POV of the person getting hit, and you didn't know which one of their clan was getting murdered by this crazy actor. Does an amazing job. Now, again, everyone's doing an amazing job making a horrific piece of fucking terror for people, but now, you know, everybody wants to, at the networks, they always want to top each other, right? This is AMC. But they are trying to compete now to create horrific mathematical models for us to witness to monetize into fucking advertising. It's unbelievable, right? So when you get into this next season and you watch the episode and you see what happens, all I will say is that the makeup for what happens is disturbingly accurate. It is elongated. The scene is really long. We're talking probably 10 minutes of stretching out the murder that this guy commits. And it is one of these horrific things that you should never see as a human being. You should never see the stuff that's in that first episode, not ever in your life. And I say that from a standpoint of having immersed myself with that stuff in the 90s when the internet came out. I had this personal fear, I think I mentioned a long time ago in season one, but I had this personal fear that if I ever came on like a bad situation, a car wreck or something, this is based on experiences of close friends of mine where they bumped into car wrecks and they weren't able to help anyone because they were getting sick because of what they saw, because they'd never seen anything like that. So I thought, Jesus, man, I want to be effective if I ever get into that situation. So I immersed myself in that, and I've got doctors for relatives, and they talk about how they eat lunch and watch surgery at the same time. And I thought, well, that's cool because you need to be able to function at all times. Nothing should be gross. It should just be, let's get people stabilized so perhaps they can see another day. But this episode is the context of the episode that someone is killing, some evil person's killing good people is part of the big problem. And then it's sort of a major look formula. And I just thought, you know, it's a good show. It's well written. It's got a good cast. But just as a matter of protest for that getting injected into this the global consciousness of, man, I'm not going to watch it anymore. You know? And you got your fucking bros out there that are like, yeah, man, you just need to nut up and watch the show. It's like, hey, dude, it's not like I can't handle what I'm looking at. It's just there are parents that watch this shit with their kids. And I would hate to think about how many kids just got exposed to that scenery. It was utterly horrific. I mean, fucking horrific. I got friends of mine who are in the medical industry who've checked back in with me, and they just said, look, I started hyperventilating, and I've seen everything live. I've seen it real, and this was just the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, yeah. So see you later, Walking Dead. But I want to give that example because that is the perfect example of what this new mechanism and perhaps understanding of the universe is all about. When the hippie movement came out, and believe me, hippie movement was just the latest collective consciousness that was spawned on by taking LSD. But, you know, the Renaissance era has various tomes written about it where we did have collective consciousness several times. The beatnik eras, I mean, just every 10 to 20 years, there's a new collective where something is bringing everyone together. And it's for the greater good of man, not for this major look bullshit, right? So now, here's the thing. We know we're built out of radio antenna sort of DNA design. Okay, that would suggest that the global consciousness of the universe is received to us, the overall feeling. There could even be a global upgrade to our operating system at some point. I mean, I'm not being facetious. Who knows, right? We have to sleep. Isn't it interesting that maybe perhaps when we go into sleep mode, and I am drawing from various science fiction things, but perhaps art is imitating life in this particular case, right? The reason why Michael Crichton thought of the Westworld, you know, universe is because he just simply felt the fact that we're going to sleep, and isn't there an interesting anomaly there? I think it's forced on us because there's a potential of rebalancing us out. You know, it happens anyway. It's, you know, if you're going with the scientific term, we have to file away our memories. You have to do all this shit that they talk, you know, rest and all this other stuff. But in the end, our bodies are completely functional while we're asleep. I had a set of dreams last night. My God, unbelievable. And I was not on any place that it could be Earth, but it didn't really have to be Earth. I didn't see any vistas or anything because I was in these buildings, but none of the buildings I was in actually matched reality. It was wild, but anyway. But so I've talked about the global station idea, but we are all individuals, aren't we? I mean, my God, if we were all the same, you know, it'd be like the Mind Over Matter episode in Twilight Zone. But we're decidedly different in many ways. And it could be just a few little instructions inside our AI that makes us different. And our core operating system is damn near identical. So somehow we seem to have, and this is where I'm going to coin a phrase here, we seem to have trapped enough of this life force to maintain our own identity. I mean, how many natural formations in the universe have sort of these healthy traps? you know. You have flowers that attract their pollination so they can procreate. And it's just a mechanical mechanism of the physical design of a flower, its pistil and all that kind of stuff. And then the way that the wind interacts with both of them, acting like the ethereal winds of our universe, to carry the pollen from the male to the female. It just happens. A whale doesn't, take its little whale hand and specifically grab all the plankton and put it in its mouth. It is swimming through the ocean against a current full of plankton so it can line its little belly, or big-ass belly, with all these little guys, and it feels like it's eaten. There's these interesting mechanisms, you know, that we see all the time in our world. You know, for you super geeks, you could think about a transistor in a silicon chip trapping electrons and creating some sort of programmable gate. All right, enough of that shit. What if our bodies are merely catcher's mitts that grow inside the womb of our mothers? And there's no volumetric correlation between the size of your spirit and your body. Perhaps there's a certain critical mass that you can gain, but, you know, there are tiny people in this universe, at least on our planet, that are fully sentient, just like someone who is a massive golem. Right? Take a 9-foot man and the tiniest human, 17-inch tall human, and, you know, they're conscious. They're human. And what's interesting is there are folks that suffer from various forms of dwarfism, and their heads are just as same size as everyone's heads. And then you do have folks that, when I was a kid, were labeled as midgets, and they were the proportional humans that were just absolutely smaller. And there is no lack of intelligence or sentient being just because the brain is a lot smaller. You know, babies are born with pretty big heads here, right? But look at a gorilla. A silverback gorilla does not come out of the womb with a silverback gorilla skull. Silverback gorilla skulls, you take my head and duplicate it over, and you're getting close to the size of their skulls. So they gain a tremendous amount of brain cavity mass. All babies on planet Earth do, right? Okay. I want to make that a distinction because this catcher's mitt idea is sort of predicated on the following. We only acknowledge what our scientific community says that we can see. And I'll give you some chronology here. Obviously, man has been looking at eyeballs for quite a long time. So we all agree on that. Now, however, perceptionally speaking, if there's any truth to the story that the shamans of the Native Americans were the only people that could see the boats coming over the ocean from Europe, and that the normal citizens couldn't see it, then there's a huge perception circuit that just allows it to happen. Which is interesting. Like, we have to have a pattern recognition system inside the human brain to see certain things, otherwise you're not allowed to see them, even if you're looking directly at them, right? Douglas Adams has a pretty funny chapter about this, and I believe the third book of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where they hide a spaceship in plain sight. And because it's so absurdly not supposed to be there, no one sees it. It's just really funny. How true was he? But in the 80s, it was a really big deal, especially as the Big Bang Theory started to disintegrate on a physics level, and that we didn't have enough mass accounted for to create the explosion and the burst ring and, you know, spherical bullshit that the Big Bang suggests. They started inventing this other absurdly ridiculous theory of dark matter, and the only way they proved it to us was to take a camera, point it at space, and expose and track infrared signals coming from space, which revealed a nebulous cloud, of which they arbitrarily claimed was a cloud, and that it was the dark matter that we were looking for. And the more that you are scientific and you look at that ridiculous, ridiculous chain of events to give substance to a ridiculous theory in the first place, you'll just be disgusted with the scientific community at large, especially anyone in 2016 who carries that horse shit. All we have done since the mid-80s is carry forward that sort of infrared X-ray technology to say that we're seeing frequencies that the human eye can't see. That is pretty much the extent of where we acknowledge there to be energy in the universe. What we can observe, what we can theorize, and what we can see through these, you know, various optics. Okay. But if you ask someone who works in hospice, who deals with individual deaths on a routine basis, they are surrounded by what you might classify as the paranormal 24 hours a day. I have a friend who works in hospice. I've interviewed her at length about this, and she has interviewed her friends at length after our conversations to try to get more details. Now, someone could be cynical and say, well, they're kind of hive-minding, they're spooky, you know, ghost stories together, but I want you to give them some credibility that if they were prone to creating fictional stories, there's no way they could be in the job that they're in, because they would be utterly freaked out. It'd be like someone who says that someone who has lied about seeing lots of ghosts and traveling to other dimensions because they need to feel important, you know? Everybody knows one of these people. And then they go work at a hospice and people are dying around them like once every other day. And because their imagination is so well developed to create something from nothing, that when they really start feeling it out, it's a whole different experience than that one out. There's that great character in the movie Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood, this young kid who comes to hire him, and he's talking all this fucking game about being a big gunslinger and how many people he's killed. The kid's just full of shit. One, he's blind as fucking bad. He can only see nearsightedness, right? He ends up shooting a guy in a shitter. And he nearly just loses his shit because it was the first time he ever killed a man. But he had already bragged that he killed dozens. It's really funny. Of course, these two old guys, Morgan Freeman and Clint Eastwood, are kind of looking at him the whole time going, yeah, if you had killed anybody, you wouldn't be acting like that, right? So let's give these people some credibility that they're not that kind of person. But what they say is that when someone dies, a bunch of wild things occur. And they're sort of in suites, depending on the type of person that's dying. It's really strange. They say the room starts to smell really strange, instantaneously. Before the body has ever had a chance to exhale anything strange, there's a very clean, plastic, trash bag kind of smell in the room. And they all smell it, all of them. A lot of times, a group of people will feel like they have entered the room in a ghostly fashion, but not really in an apparition way, but more in a presence way, just there to welcome this person to the other realm. In the hospital, they've said that they've seen and helped people back to their rooms that are no longer there anymore. But what it'll be is, I believe the way the story went, and I apologize if I have this wrong, but it was if a noob comes to that particular ward, they will end up helping a woman get from one side to the other, or, you know, a guy from one side to the other, have a conversation with someone in the hallway or in a room. And then they'll go to the break room and say, oh, you know, so-and-so just went, I just had to help so-and-so, you know, get to her room. And the people who've worked there for a long time just look at each other like, holy shit, that lady's been dead for a month or a year or whatever. So it's very interesting that we have evidence that we're not willing to accept or talk about because it's, you know, it's the old idea that we're crazy. We're crazy if we observe things. Now, I've never seen anything like that, so I don't know. I mean, I had a vision of my grandmother telling me she had died, or she was on the other side and safe and okay around 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And my mom calls me about 2 o'clock that day and tells me she had passed away the night before. So that's I guess, one thing that happened to me. I've never seen a ghost apparition in my life. Like a true, I think everyone else can see this thing, apparition. Never happened. The thing is what if there's a life force? Let's just keep it really, really, really simple. There is a life force. Our spirits are made from it. But what if our body, by being made of antenna designs right in front of our frickin' face, a double helix, my God, is just the most unequivocal design to catch any sort of transverse or longitudinal wave of any design, and the life force could travel in waves as well. It could be made of the fabric of the universe. It could all be the same stuff. We're just unable to track it. But I have consciousness. You have consciousness. And I would say that in my later years of life, this universe appears to have a frequency. We appear to have feelings that seem to correlate. You know, I'm watching the series MASH with a buddy of mine at his house, and he just got the DVD series in an estate sale, and we watched the movie, and we're watching this, and I'm looking at the fact that, and I know this for a fact, I mentioned it several times on the show, but you know, 40 years ago, we were in a completely different light. We were in a happy place, and stupid, silly jokes were really funny. And of course, you can easily say that it's the psychological, you know, development of man, that by exacerbating and empowering, you know, Hillary Clinton type people, you do get a really shitty universe of war and terrorism as they live in this upper echelon of self-loathing, psychopathic behavior. They don't want the world to be any happier than they are, which is pretty much what all your friends do who Debbie Downer your world, right? They come into your world, they have to take a shit on it because no one can be happier than they are, right? But it would appear that if Walking Dead can remotely air episode 1, season 7, if that can go over without massive social protest, then we're a different species nowadays, and not for the better. Those kind of things should never happen in the world, fictionally or otherwise. And I don't mean to restrict, you know, First Amendment and all that stuff. I'm not saying that. But we should want a better world is all I'm saying. And you go look back, and of course, while MASH is being filmed in 1970 and 72, as the series started, Vietnam War is absolutely going nuts in the real world. So I'm not trying to put out some euphoric, idealistic vision of things. But we seem to have a global consciousness. Now, for any of you who believe in a spirit, and you're willing to go a little bit further than just your Judeo-Christian definition of a spirit, and you don't have to if you don't want to, but if you're trying to get into sort of the science behind the theory, and you usually get to a point where you say to yourself, well, at some point, the spirit and the body work together. They seem to kind of stick together. You know, one of the episodes I did last season, it's one of these things, if you're on a bullet train or on a roller coaster that goes from 0 to 60 really, really fast, you don't seem to lose connection with your spirit. It's not like it's some loosely connected thing. A drag race car, you know, top fuel driver goes from 0 to 325 miles per hour within a split second. His or her spirit doesn't sit back there at the green light. And so we're pretty well coupled. Something's going on there. Now, we debate all the time as to whether or not the spirit attaches to a body early, you know, inside the womb. I would assume so. But then we're talking about just a couple embryonic cells starting to split, and then the spirit attaches, and it has a little consciousness. Now, it could be that, you know, autonomic systems kick in, and you get the kicking and the pushing and the prodding. Some women say they hear their kids singing and talking inside. I believe all that stuff. So at some point it happens, and then we're here. But here's the thing. If we were to scientifically be able to prove that the human cells are a receiving antenna, I mean, prove it. Again, we got to look for it before we can prove it, right? I'm not trying to find dinosaurs when they've never existed prior to my theory sort of thing. But think about it. They've banned cigarettes in public places. But you can drink in public places. Why is there a difference? Because one of them, you drink it inside yourself, and even though you'll go out and plow into a family of four and kill them drunk driving, that's okay. But your smoking travels throughout the air in the room. It's made of all kinds of horrible shit. And least of all, tobacco. And it pollutes everyone's lungs. And so there's secondhand smoke going on. And so it's banned in most areas. 20, supposed to be 20 feet in California. It's supposed to be 20 feet from the door of any public establishment. I assure you that's not happening. But that's because there's this global health risk, supposedly. All right. I think that the governments also understand that the more they make their governments suck and the people suffer, that smoking goes up because it's a stress reliever. Now, cigars are a beautiful thing that you... It's made of 100% tobacco, no chemicals inside here whatsoever. There aren't just regular fermented stuff. But they're much more methodical than a cigarette addiction, right? Douglas Adams had a great thing in his second book of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy about a universe that was addicted to shoes. And it was because they made everyone depressed, and so everyone looked down at their feet. And when they looked down at their feet, the only thing that makes them happy again is a nice pair of shoes. And so the biggest companies in the world became shoe companies. Until the people got so sick and tired of this repressive system that they began to spawn wings, and they all became birds. So they'd never have to use their shoes again. Forbidden to land on the ground down below. What would be the physical model if we were to accept the fact that the double helix inside of our body is an antenna? What would be the physical model? There's physical models for blood circulation. There's physical models for nervous system distribution. What would be the physical model of a spirit chain? Some sort of undetectable energy that is broadcasting across these antennas. Now, electrical engineer might say, well, if you're going to make the point that double helix is an antenna, then you're restricted to the flow of electrons or the flow of radio frequencies. And I would agree to an extent. If any of you have studied, or if you haven't studied, the Fibonacci pattern or the golden rule or the golden mean, it will blow your mind if you've never seen it. The best examples are seashells. They are the distribution of thorns up the shaft of a rose bush. But there are all kinds of plants that rely on this, and it's phenomenal. There seems to be an electrical pattern to the way that everything seems to spawn. Now, if something gets bigger, it tends to create anomalies, just like in us. You know, one of my ears is like a quarter inch or half an inch taller or, you know, lower than the other one. So even though my body is struggling to create a perfect symmetrical being, I'm not perfect, right? Almost. No. There's this theory that if you grow your hair out, that your hair is, again, a bunch of antennae, and that you become more spiritual. There was an article that went around about the Navajo Indians being used during war because they had long hair as a matter of religion, and they became a lot more spiritually connected to the universe, and they could track human beings in war better than people with shaved heads. But now look at the definition of what they call a bohemian. Bohemian is sort of your long-haired, bearded, you know, rustic, post-King Arthur, Sir Lancelot character that is one with nature. Sort of like your Celtic warriors from Ireland who had long hair and beards and fought naked. Your Viking warriors, your Germanian warriors, all long hair. And where did you get a Prussianistic army from? Your short-haired Romans. They shave their heads, cut them short. It promoted a lack of spiritual connection and thus empathy for the world, right? It is interesting, the sensitivity of a bohemian person and the more brutal nature of a soldier that has had his head shaved. We talked about it in the past. First thing that happens when you join basic training, so shave your head. Now, there's a practical use for that because you don't want some butthole pulling on your hair during a war and you don't during a fight, and you definitely don't want the shit in your face when you're trying to fight. Somehow, Europe was conquered with men like this, but with our mechanical weapons today, it's not such a good idea. But now let's look at the density pattern of the human body. Where is the human body most dense and most complex? Pound for pound, cubic inch for cubic inch. I think it is safe to assert that the brain is the most compact tissue base we have in our body. when you look at the design of the human brain, you look at its origin point, which is the stem of the brain. The stem of the brain comes up from the base of your spine. I think most science fiction writers have done this due diligence, and that's why a lot of sci-fi films like, you know, The Dark City and, Playtest by Black Mirror, there's always something inserted at the base of the neck. But it's been in V, it's been in tons of things, right? It's been in Star Trek episodes where little parasitical creatures crawl into the spine just underneath the base of the skull. Now, it goes up into the pineal gland, which is very, very interesting because we call that the third eye. A third eye would only be the third eye if it would open up the receiving frequencies of human consciousness, right? Which is why they put fluoride in all your food, to put a dust blocker inside your pineal gland. Just straight up math, people. But our consciousness is behind our eyeballs. And I know what a lot of you think. You're thinking, well, you know, I feel like I'm in my brain because I have two eyeballs out the front of my brain socket. All right. I wouldn't completely disagree with you, but now I want you to think about in 3D space where you feel like you really are. Do you feel like you're inside your eye sockets? I mean, right there on the front of your skull? Or do you actually feel like there is a nebulous body of energy inside your skull cavity? And isn't it interesting that when you think about your consciousness like that, you do not actually feel like you are your body? You feel like your body is assigned to your skull, assigned to your consciousness inside your skull, or sort of in that area. I can tell you right now, my consciousness feels a lot bigger than my skull. And it always has, especially if I'm really, really tired and trying to stay up. And I study the way I fall asleep after being up 36 hours. It feels like my consciousness is falling out of my skull. And that is why I'm going to sleep, what they call falling asleep, right? Now, when they open up the brain, they absolutely don't see anything remotely indicative of human consciousness. As a matter of fact, the most frustrating thing for a neurosurgeon or neuroscientist is the absolute unification of the gray matter that's in the brain. The only thing they've been able to do is open up a skull and push and prod on it and figure out which areas are assigned to various communication mapping to the body, right? So your hands are a gigantic portion of your skull. You know, they figured out what the visual cortex is physically. They figure out where sort of the liaison points are for your memory. But at no point can they account for a cellular structure that is your memory. So everything is trial and error to sort of map out the brain. It is very similar to the science that the Chinese came up with mapping the bottom of your foot in an acupuncture map to the rest of the body. Acupuncture is the same exact thing. For every point, there's a counterpoint in the body. It's a very interesting design. And believe me, man, I've got friends who've done acupuncture. I'm yet to do it. I'm excited to do it. And it works, man. I had a friend of mine who had a flickering eyelid. He just got it really bizarrely. He was a chef, and he was like, man, my eyelid just keeps flickering all day. And so he went and got acupuncture after a friend talked him into it. He's very cynical, did not believe it was going to happen. And the acupuncture guy looks at him and says, oh, yeah, no problem. And he went over here to his arm joint right above the elbow and stuck him with the needle, and his eyeball went nuts and started flickering like crazy. And he did it for so many minutes, like 30 minutes or something like that, I guess, and then pulled it out, and the eye stopped. And he goes, that just fixed you. You're going to pay me for what I just did. I've been here for 20 years. I'll be here another 10 at least. And he goes, if that ever comes back up, I'll do it for free. And it went away forever. Totally trippy, man. I mean, that's how Eastern medicine has figured out the human body hundreds, if not thousands of years ago. And here we are thinking we're so brilliant. The Egyptians worshiped the third eye, as well as the Hindus. The whole chakra system. And the chakra system is not built off the notion of electromagnetism and electrons. It is built off of a much higher consciousness and frequency with the universe, that every gland in the body is actually assigned to a certain sort of frequency in the body. If you're looking for very specific results, you talk to a very specific gland and you will get those specific results. But now, if you start studying the human biology, you'll know that a human cell is a massively brilliant little creature. If you study the works of Bruce Lipton, Wisdom of Our Cells, which you can listen to for free on YouTube. Again, I paid $70 for that book in audio form. Bruce reads it to you. It'll absolutely, positively change the way you think about the human body. But he teaches you meticulously the composition of a human cell and the way that it interacts on an electrical level. It is its own little being. Now, there's no indication it has a consciousness, but maybe it does. Who knows, right? Maybe each individual human being is a collective consciousness, and it just keeps getting at the power of 10. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and smaller and smaller and smaller. But it's always there. But now, what if the human body is merely the land that guides the stream? And the stream, the water that goes over the land, through aqueducts and aqua ravines, it is merely the life force that makes us up. I shouldn't say merely, but it makes us up. And let's just say, just like a glacier, just like water in general, water can also change the terrain of the world it's in. You know, we all know that, you know, ravines and streams and all this other stuff, before water came in, sometimes they form and water joins them later. And then eventually the water erodes the land. But chronologically, it can go in whatever order that's possible. I assure you that things that follow the Fibonacci pattern in life are things that are growing in electrical patterns. That is a certainty, a fact, period. Well, that's a huge upgrade to the way we're taught about anything in the world. You were not taught in school if you study botany. As far as I know, PhD botanists do not routinely discuss the Fibonacci pattern as a pattern by which life creates itself. But that, you know, in botany, you can see it. You can see the way a rose petals come up out of a rose bud. It's a Fibonacci pattern. But now, if let's just say we could get over the hump of botanists acknowledging this, and you know, I don't want to say the world is waking up to this whole thing. So we are becoming aware of this. But now, why on earth would that Fibonacci pattern inside organic matter fail to be transferred to the human body and how we form? Because we don't have distinct Fibonacci patterns inside the human body that I am aware of. You know, it's not completely true. We have cellular tissues that grow, but you look at the way that the eye of an insect forms. When a bunch of spheres bang into each other in nature, they create hexagonal patterns. And that's how the eye of an insect is formed. It's really phenomenal. And it all locks into place. I mean, can you imagine looking through an insect lens? Jesus, you would never feel like you're alone as long as you have one friend, right? But telepathically communicating between ourselves, for me, is a profound spiritual realization of the human body. Because there's the mechanism by which two cells might telepathically communicate, which is using a substrate of communication, a sub-ethernet, if you will, that is not trackable by our current instruments. We don't see the electrons flow between cells because it's not electrons. Electrons contribute to the stability of our form, or the formation of our body. But it is not the information. It's not the TCP/IP packet going between cells. That is invisible to us because we are unwilling to think outside the box and think about it. It is a well-known fact that cancer can be created out of a certain state of mind. Worry. Worry and panic and fear create cancer in the human body, which is why you cannot afford to give a fuck that much. You can't. If you're a mother worrying about your kid, try to turn it into a sort of non-emotional mathematical prevention mechanism and not some sort of empathetic, acidic thing in your body. A friend of mine's wife died of cancer, and he firmly believes that his wife, who spent the majority of her time worrying about their kids and their safety when their kids were perfectly fine, well-developed, beautiful, intelligent kids were fine. She worried herself into cancer. Now, there's no conclusive proof that's the case, but there's a lot of oncologists that know that the overall spirit of a person that comes in pre-diagnosed, right, they have no idea if they have it, have a preponderance to be worry warts or having acidic experiences, right? So I mentioned, you know, Walking Dead. I guarantee you, my body created cancerous cells, if not just for a fleeting moment while watching the first act of that episode. It was not good for my body to see that. It's not good for you to watch a documentary about a drug cartel leader or some Whitey Bulger who's killed a bunch of people. Especially when it's not true. In some cases, they fictionally embellish things. Sometimes they fictionally whitewash things. But if you're watching something that is making you feel acidic, and you're not looking at it from a sociological experiment of non-emotion, and believe me, I want you to be emotional as well, but when it comes to feeling negativity, I'd rather you go into a more stoic gear of yourself and not let it be so crazy. But now, we prevent cigarettes from being smoked in public because they have adverse health effects for people around you. All right. That's the basis by which we outlaw such a thing in bars and restaurants and public places. Fine. Great. More power to us, right? But now, what if we were broadcasting something that creates patients for cancer centers? Obviously, we know that, you know, you can feed super acidic, toxic food to people and give them cancer, and the FDA will write everyone a blank check because it's big business. So is television. Now, we always talk about on this show that if we were to be three-dimensionally face-to-face, thank you, Jed, if we're three-dimensionally face-to-face with each other, there's a much better experience than you watching me on YouTube in black and white. Why is that? Well, I think that the observable pull-your-head-out-of-your-ass summation is that because we're communicating our frequencies together, you can utterly and completely feel not only the physical warmth, cold, whatever, of my body. If we're sitting on a sofa, I sit down, the sofa goes up on your side, whatever, way beyond that bullshit. You're feeling my soul, my intent, my goodness, my excitement to be with you. That's what you're feeling. And that's what feels amazing. So telepathic communication between cells not only supports the ecosystem of your very being, but is also the mechanism by which we stay healthy as human beings between each other. These people who sit on their iPhones, or I don't mean iPhones, their cell phones, and they sit on the internet on their desktop computers at home, and they never socialize with anyone, they're not healthy people. Physically not healthy, as well as mentally not healthy. I don't mean they're insane or anything, I just think that they have a epiphany of greatness that their body is being prevented from experiencing because they have social issues or they're just buying into the medium too much. It's not good for us. We're not going to get the corporations and the corrupt governments of the world to ever care about us. And that is why if you ever hear a health regimen coming down from a corporation or a government, at this day and age in 2016, late fall, or early fall, I guess, the best bet is to invert whatever they're saying and follow that advice instead. Because they're not out for your health. They're just not. If they tell you vaccinations are what you should be taking, that's exactly what you shouldn't be taking. If they say you should be taking flu shots, you shouldn't take them. Flu shot acceptability just went down this year for the first time in history. And the amount of flu outbreaks just reduced for the first time in history. Because these goddamn flu shots are giving people the flu, for fuck's sake. And they spread them to their families. There's no moral fiber in a corporation. There has never been moral fiber in a corporation, and there never will be a moral fiber in a corporation. An individually owned sole proprietor business, perhaps. Maybe a partnership for a little while. But it is soon eradicated by the bankers who take over the corporations. You know, Apple Computer started out pretty good. They still desire to profit in selling their box, and because we believe in destiny by way of profit, because there's no other means to get free from the system, we support that mechanism. Sort of the lesser of two evils, if you were, but the second they got financed by Fidelity, It became a massive profit machine. It was, how much can we charge for this machine? What's the maximum amount of money we can charge for the machines that we sell? Every corporation does it, right? Same thing goes for your pharmaceutical companies. Same thing goes for your government. They're always trying to tax you to death. The human body is a big, giant collection of antennas. Trillions and trillions and trillions of antenna receivers. I'm going to suggest the more receivers that you have, you might be able to feel better. You know, women typically have longer hair than men, so we call them empathetic mothers. They are the right brain in the Egyptian lore. The man typically has shorter hair because they have to war and battle and kill the food every day. And that's just the style of the universe, right? And so we're not empathetic very often. We're stoic, we're soldier bound, and if we don't get a woman, a good woman by our side, we will never become balanced, as the Egyptians always alluded to. The Egyptians knew about right brain, left brain, and they knew that the woman needed to learn the logic of a man, and a man needed to learn the empathy and sensitivity of a woman. And Christ Almighty, that was, even in the fabled history, that's 5,000 years ago. There's a lot of us think it goes back 45,000 years. So there's a lot of kind of new agers going around, and I'm very sensitive to the idea that anyone can join a movement. And so the problem is that you can get crazy next to truth, and therefore the truth has a hard time sneaking out. And the analogy I always bring up over the episodes is in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Richard Dreyfuss was a very sentient person who saw UFOs, and Spielberg was brilliant enough to add a scene to the film. Richard Dreyfuss goes to the Air Force to try and get a briefing on what the hell they saw. But there's this crazy old man, and he was also at the observations, and he has his own opinions, and he's in the room, and he talks about having seen Bigfoot with a 42-inch foot. Made a sound he would not want to hear twice, he said. And then they put the tight shot on Dreyfuss's face, and he just looks at this old man and goes, holy shit, this is not where I'm ever going to get any evidence. And I look like a crazy person because Mr. Crazy showed up. And in that particular scenario, you know, maybe Bigfoot does exist somewhere in the universe, but the problem is without focusing, without keeping the conversation on whatever the hell we're trying to research and not try to introduce weird alternate theories, your New Age movement falls apart quite quickly, right? But there are these folks that are ridiculed in the world, and I think there might be a lot of scientific basis for what they're trying to do. Perhaps they don't know what we're talking about here. Maybe they know 10 times what I'm trying to say, which is what I think is probably the case. But you have crystal huggers, and you have folks that believe in the overall frequency and good nature of man. I've been talking about crystals a lot, and I have a friend of mine I'm going to use to get fully up to date on sort of which crystals do what. I'm going to study the scientific frequencies of those particular crystals once she sort of educates me and maps them in my brain. And I'll bring that to you later. But here's the duality. You have someone like David Icke. And David Icke is, boy, he believes in a lot of different things. And I don't think that there's probably a single human being that believes everything that he believes, but to each their own, right? But he has done his research on this particular antenna thing, and he's been in Wembley Stadium a couple decades ago talking about these frequency models and the holographic universe and the fact that our helix is an antenna. He didn't have any of these theories, but he does a great job, you know, aggregating this stuff together so we can see it. And he was probably the first person I ever saw talk about the fact that the double helix is an antenna. And having electronics background myself and dealt with plenty of CBs and all kinds of crazy electronics in the 70s and 80s, I definitely know that he's telling the truth. You know, where he got his information was pretty accurate, let's put it that way. All right. One of his mantras today, and it's not only his, but he's one of the guys really pushing it forward, is he goes around and does his speeches. He talks about the fact that we need to get our frequencies on the same map. And we need to fight, essentially, the tyranny, the control, the evil of this planet, which would be anything that is trying to obstruct the destiny of man. And this is pretty much most people on planet Earth trying to do this in some form or fashion. But he comes at it from a frequency standpoint, which seems very New Age. And because most of us don't have the education, that supports this theory, we don't have faith in it to begin with. And so if we needed to have a belief system which exacerbates a frequency that, again, is not riddled with man-made gods and a bunch of other weird, you know, wrathful leaders in the world, then we can't get the ball rolling. That's the problem. And we need to get the ball rolling. We really do. But now let's just say that, David Icke is able to adjust his pitch on stage. And he gets a lot of other people on stage in different venues that happen to talk the way that other people in other areas of the world believe. He gets an Asian to talk about it, an Indian, a Native American Indian, and an Indian, and, you know, South American person, African person, all these European people, American people, Canadian people. And he gets everybody to start believing in this frequency model. Everyone starts getting educated on the telepathic properties of cells, that there is a life force that might be a lot bigger than the electron cloud force that drives the Fibonacci pattern. What would be the only resisting force at that point, or I should say, what would be the primary resistance force to this sort of takeover of the world, this mental revolution of consciousness in the world? It would be broadcast media, internet media, television media, radio media. And I would say, if any of you have seen Katy Perry, musical media. As we try to think unified thoughts of empathy and goodness towards man, they could just simply broadcast fiction, reality, doesn't matter. Taking the worst things that happen in your neighborhood or neighborhoods across the world and broadcast it into your neighborhood so you feel like it's next door. Like I've said several times, there's no reason why I need to know about a murder in some other part of the world where I can't affect anything, I can't affect any change. If there's a trend of serial killing, a trend of a poison, a trend of something that is bad, then yeah, you want to warn the world about that sequence of events so that we can monitor the sequence of events and realize we might be approaching a moment of danger. But the gory details related to it don't need to happen. We have fake beheadings all the time, right? We have caught the original footage of the original ISIS beheading in a Pakistani television station / special effects studio filming that first beheading with the guy in the orange and this jihad Johnny or whatever the hell his name is in the black thing. We have seen now, as confirmed by, what is it, Senator McCain's assistant, because they knew they were completely busted, that whole thing was fake. If you ever watch the first episode of Black Mirror Season 1, where the Prime Minister is forced to have sex with a pig, they show you right there exactly how they would CG a head on a body, so he didn't actually have to do that. But watch the episode. So we have to be careful. We have to know our enemy. Does that mean that everything broadcast on television and through these mediums is bad? Hell no. There's plenty of kitty cat videos, right? Little cool puppy dog videos and all that good stuff. Funny videos from comedians. But the problem is, as long as that's open programming, we don't really want we don't want to infringe on our freedom of speech. But what's really interesting is, and I'm going to sound almost contradictory here, but imagine the forefathers of America, which created a really screwed up two-party system while they wanted to be the party that ruled over us. Believe me, I understand that. But imagine they are drafting this Bill of Rights and this Constitution and this freedom of speech, First Amendment, which needs to be protected by the Second under all means. But we as human beings need to filter and discern what we take in, right? But imagine we sat them down and showed them, you know, Episode 1, Season 7 of Walking Dead, and we go, okay, and by 2016, approximately 200 years later, 250 years later, somewhere near, this is what this amendment's going to turn into. Now, you guys are some pretty smart guys. Is there anything you want to add to this amendment? And they may actually decide, no, we just got to let it all roll. But perhaps they didn't have this understanding of how we communicate as human beings. It's a tough problem to solve, isn't it? We don't want anything to infringe on our ability to express ourselves. Some sickos want to see that shit. Some, you know, I was reading the posts on Facebook after I watched the episode, just kind of seeing the human reaction to this whole thing. And, you know, it's obviously littered with fans of the show telling everybody that they're, you know, that they're pussies for not wanting to watch this kind of stuff. But I thought, how interesting. How interesting that there's a male out there that can't find any other mechanism to measure himself, to designate himself as a man besides watching a horrific fiction on television. That's how this guy measures his bravado, his macho nature, his ability to be a man, as if somehow you want to vicariously be the guy, you know, crushing a head with a bat covered in razor blade wire. Now, in terms of Hollywood emotional payoff, you probably have folks in Hollywood thinking that was one of the most masterful episodes ever made, because the way that it made the blood pressure go up in everyone who watched it was extremely unified and accurate. Wow, you know. But I think that most of us know if you were to put any horrific lowbrow thing on television, you would get the same thing. There's a reason why beheadings aren't broadcast on television, uncensored. It's never done. You have to find that shit on the internet, right? And maybe the world would devolve down to something like that in a post-apocalyptic zombie world. Doesn't take zombies to be post-apocalyptic, let me remind you. But imagine now, some prick, some total dickhead, okay, let me just use a few words there, watches that episode, and then we have some sort of cataclysm, a bad earthquake, a meteor hits Earth in a light way, but it still screws up the Earth, or the power grid gets shut down and blamed on ISIS, so we can't vote properly. Whatever happens, there's some cataclysmic thing that occurs. And he's seen that episode, and now, because he doesn't have any other mechanism to measure his manlyhood, he's grown up a dysfunctional human being because a dysfunctional society programmed his mind. He becomes that evil, evil man. That fictional character becomes real. And then that horrific stuff becomes real because it was imagined in someone's mind, broadcast through television, and it became the fabric of that human being. That's why I say we got to fix the pyramid from the bottom up, people. We absolutely have to. We cannot just slice the head off the snake and hope one doesn't grow back, because it will. Killing all the bankers and the oligarchy families of the world without fixing the pyramid down below first, you're just creating job openings. You're not fixing anything. So what's your homework? Your homework is this. On this particular exercise, I want you to start feeling who you are. Stop believing in any of the paradigms that you picked up without even really being taught that this is the way you are. Think about it. We've done a lot of episodes on dreams. And it's funny how, you know, we have a great commenter. So I'm going to mention one of you guys commenting. And please understand, I love your comments and I want you to keep going. But I asked the question of why do human beings sleep? Why do beings sleep? And I got a really funny answer that was just sort of, it was like a slightly elaborated answer of because. Because, that's why we sleep. We are a binary system of on, off, on, off, on, off. And I thought, wow, that's not really thinking. Really. I'm telling you that I understand the binary reality of what we are. What I'm trying to get you to think of is the next step. Disengage from that paradigm of thought and really think. Think it through. Someone designed it this way, and I don't think that there would be a need under any circumstance to switch off a being for any length of time if it exists. I mean, if you made an android in your basement and it looked exactly like human beings and it was made just like Westworld hosts, right? Synthesized muscle tissue, there's no circuitry, it is an organic life matter, and you invented it. Would you really make it sleep for any reason whatsoever unless you needed to check the programming, back up the system, all that kind of stuff? Would you really just impose sleep on that being because it's imposed on you? Well, that would be, I think, an act of ignorance. You're imposing a paradigm that you don't understand yourself on this being. unless, again, there's a mechanical need to do so, which would mean you've created an incomplete, flawed being, or its very nature has limits. Maybe it's you're designing into the limits, and you've got to do some time machine backup of the being. Maybe as you watch the program go for 24 hours or so, or however many hours of consciousness you give your android, you need to adjust the program. Well, the same thing goes about this. I want you to feel who you are. I want you to feel the distinction of your body, your spirit, and your mind, defined as your physical feedback system of the five senses, your spiritual consciousness that seems to be your identity when you really think about who you are. If someone says, who are you? I mean, as a person, who are you? And when you start to feel those choices that you've made since you've had sentient thought in this particular vessel, those are the answers I'm looking for. And then I want you to think of your mind as what you were thinking about at this specific moment in time. And if you need to, go back to moments of elation, moments of perhaps trauma, and think about what was in your mind at that point in time. And then think the last question, which is, how did it get there? How did you get that thought in your mind? On 9/11, we had our minds absolutely built from scratch because we watched an horrific event on television for most of us. And the only way we were able to, and that is like an industrial fan blowing everything off the table of everything you were thinking before you saw those horrific events. And then the only thing that's putting things back on the table are the agents that built the fan in the first place. Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden. 19 hijackers. It kept you from studying the event in any level of detail. But we need to study these events. We need to study every moment of our existence, at least for a little while, so that we can gain sort of that autonomic execution of our consciousness, which would be tantamount to driving a car. When you're driving a car as a teenager, you are worried about everything. How your mirrors are angled, whether or not you're putting the blinker on at the right moment. Did you pull up enough? Did you go out fast enough? All those little meticulous things, and eventually it just becomes ubiquitous to your nature. But as human beings, I think we need to absolutely do that with our very being. So why do I want you to go off and study your body, your mind, and your spirit? Because that will give you the foundational connection, your day-to-day, second-to-second awareness that will give you the foundational understanding, your 4-year degree, I should say, to go on to your graduate degree to think about how the universe will be put together using some form of telepathic cells. You need to then conquer, let's just go with the college analogy, your graduate degree is going to be you figuring out how you liaison with yourself. When you're presented with stuff that is horrific, whether it be a story made of words or something on television or a movie, you need to really feel yourself. Feel how your body transfers and translates. When you feel the hair on the back of your neck stand up, it's a very literal thing that's occurring. What's related to how your body and your mind and spirit are all coming together at once. Now, your PhD in this analogy is going to be your socialistic expansion of that understanding. How does your spirit connect with other people's spirits? And then how, on a global scale, with first your town, your state, your country, think about it on those levels, and then you're going to have to hand in your thesis of how your country, with its predispositions and cultural norms, is going to be liaisoning with other countries that have completely different beliefs than you, right? We're always saying that we can have like a bloodless revolution, right? I can't think of a more bloodless revolution strategy than becoming spiritually aware. I can't. Other than God himself coming down and just waving a magic wand and taking away the burden of mankind. I'm not even sure an alien invasion could pull that off. They could certainly speed things up if you're willing to recognize them as aliens and not angels. We own this world. We own our lives. We do. And doesn't this just sound fun? I mean, come on. If you made it to the end of this episode, I'm sure you do think it's fun. There is no limit to the frontiers of being alive. We don't need another continent somewhere. We don't need continents outside of some flat Earth model thing. We don't need any of that shit. We don't even need the stars. We don't need the planets just yet. We haven't mastered being on this freaking ball planet, right? Or disc, if that's what you dig. We don't. Maybe this is a big West world. What would that mean to us? Not much. I still got to pay my bills. I don't think I have a guest in my house. I put a little more thought into the West world analogy. It was very interesting to think that a couple things here. Imagine this. Imagine this is a Westworld sort of thing. If you haven't seen it, you know, again, I tried to explain it earlier, but it's, you know, some folks are these androids that are serving the human beings that come in to visit on this sort of flat disc-ish. It's three-dimensional, but it's a Western slice of sort of the Midwest of America. And inside there, people can visit the 1800s, and they're called the visitors. They're humans. They're the inventors of this place, and they can live out all their fantasies from rape, murder, success, treasure hunts, all that kind of stuff. Imagine that we were something like that. But you didn't know if you were a host or a guest. You didn't know. Are we guests sitting here trying to re-engineer society and win against them? Is that what we're doing? Or are we the hosts serving those elite motherfuckers that seem to just destroy the world? Is someone like a Hillary a guest? You know? Is the George Soros a guest? And they're just morbidly going around destroying the world? And no matter how evil they are, the program is set up to make sure that they never get caught because none of the hosts have any balls to blow the whistle. It's pretty interesting, right? Again, if you haven't seen Westworld, it's on HBO. And I will say that if you're willing to pay for a membership to Netflix, whose rates continually seem to go up, but it's obviously well worth it, HBO Go doesn't cost that much more. And my God, do they have some wild things on there. I'm in no way affiliated with anything. If you haven't picked up on the Black Mirror episodes coming out of the UK that are rebroadcast on Netflix, you need to get with it. Black Mirror is more than just a Twilight Zone type series. Every show is absolutely different with different stories, different characters. They're not in the same time zones. Usually it's kind of near future. But the moral impact and realizations that are in Black Mirror episodes are incredible. Yes, every once in a while they'll drop stupid agendas like global warming and that kind of stuff, but just don't lose it for a couple sentences that probably ended up paying for their episodes. Get into the overall impact. There's one out there called Nosedive, which is the fresh one in season 3. Everybody who's ever been frustrated with social media needs to watch that because, boy, they create a fake application for a cell phone in that episode that could be created tomorrow that would make the world the most superficial, I would say, horrible place on Earth. But they actually educate both sides of the equation quite beautifully. But you need to see it. So obviously this is sort of an abstract thing, but hopefully it really helps you sort of figure out what we don't have figured out. We must talk about what we don't talk about. And then we have to go deeper sometimes than that. And that's what this episode is. If you dig the episode, please like. If you like the series, please subscribe. Again, the subjects change quite a bit. So yes, it's perfectly okay for you not to watch an episode because you read the title and it appeals to you not. That is fine. Don't worry about it. You don't have to unsubscribe just because it's like that. And one of the reasons why I kind of push for you to stay subscribed is that I feel like we got some brilliant minds that come in for certain episode topics. And I don't want to lose your comments simply because the next episode is not something you dig, or the next 3 episodes is not something you dig. Just hang in there. Just let it be off to the side. So anyway, if you made it this far, thanks for watching. If you're interested in the podcast, it's hosted from mkultraradio.com, which is more of a sort of channel you can tune to, and there's different programs in there. We don't do our other show anymore at all because we're just simply too far away. We haven't officially called each other and said we're not going to do it anymore. So, you know, there could be an episode here and there, but I think it's pretty much dead at this point. I'm debating pulling the channel off YouTube altogether, even though I just remastered every episode over there. So anyway, thanks for watching. Take care of yourself and someone else, and we will get together again on another Deep Thoughts. Over now.